my hair into my mouth. I flick the vent closed and then pull a strand of hair away from my lips with my fingers. Miller's eyes follow my movements, lingering on my mouth for a moment. The way he's looking at me is making it really difficult to inhale a proper breath. As if he can tell I'm having a physical reaction to just being in his presence, his eyes fall even more to my heaving chest, albeit very briefly. He pulls his sucker out of his mouth and grips his steering wheel, looking away from me.
I changed my mind. I need you to get out of my truck.
I'm dumbfounded by his words, and also very confused. Changed your mind about what? He looks at me again, and for some reason, he looks torn. He drags in a slow breath.
I don't know. I feel really confused around you.
He feels confused around me? That makes me smile. My smile makes him frown. I don't even know what's happening right now. I don't know if I like it or hate it, but I do know that whatever it is that makes me feel the way I do when I'm around him is a feeling that can only be fought for so long. He's looking back at me like he's almost at the end of his fight. You really need to figure out your shit, Miller. He nods.
Believe me, I know I do. That's why I need you to get out of my truck.
This entire interaction is so bizarre, I can only laugh about it. My laugh finally makes him smile. But then he groans and grips his steering wheel with both hands, pressing his forehead against it.
Please get out of my truck, Clara,
he whispers. I should hate that he's battling some sort of moral struggle right now. I like this feeling, thinking he might be attracted to me, a lot more than thinking he hates me. I try to keep Shelby at the forefront of my mind. Knowing he has a girlfriend that he loves and cares for keeps me from climbing across this seat and kissing him like I want to. But I know I'm not doing anything to help prevent him from having the same urge, because I'm still sitting in his truck, despite him asking me to get out no less than 3 times. I might even make it worse when I reach over and pull his sucker out of his grip. Miller? He tilts his head, still pressed against the steering wheel, and stares at me. You're confusing me, too. I put his sucker in my mouth and grab the door handle. Miller keeps his head tilted just enough so that he can watch me exit his truck. As soon as I shut the door, he locks it, then puts the truck in reverse like he can't get away from me fast enough. I get into my car, fully convinced that Aunt Jenny was wrong about one thing. She said girls were more confusing than guys. I don't believe that for a second. I back out of my parking spot after Miller is gone. When I pull onto the road, my phone rings. It's Lexi. Shit. Lexi. I answer it. I'm sorry, I'm turning around. You forgot me. I know I'm the worst. Coming back now.
Chapter 11. Morgan. 2 years, 6 months, and 13 days. That's how long Chris's life insurance was supposed to last in a worst-case scenario when I did the math. But adding an infant into the mix is going to throw us into poverty level. I can't get a job if I have an infant. I can't afford daycare if I get a job. I can't sue Jonah for child support because he's not even the father. When Elijah begins to cry, I pile the paperwork together and go tend to him. Again. I thought Elijah was nothing like Clara was at this age, but I'm beginning to think I was wrong. Because all he's done for the last few days is cry. He naps occasionally, but he's mostly been crying. I'm sure it's because I'm not familiar to him. He's used to Jenny, and he hasn't heard her voice in a while. He hasn't heard Jonah's since Sunday night. I'm doing the best I can at pretending this will turn out okay, but I'm starting to worry it won't, because Jonah hasn't responded to a single one of my texts. Jonah very well may not come back. And do I blame him? He's right. I'm the one related to this baby by blood, not him. It's as if Elijah is more my responsibility now. Despite being on the birth certificate, Jonah really doesn't have an obligation to raise a child who was created by my sister and my husband. I was hoping the 2 months Jonah had spent with Elijah would be enough to form that unbreakable bond between parent and child, and that he'd come to his senses and show up, apologetic and heartbroken. But that didn't happen. It's going on day 4, and here I am, possibly about to raise a newborn in the midst of this chaos. Last night, I couldn't stop thinking about it while I sat in the living room, holding Elijah as he screamed his head off for an hour straight. I actually started laughing hysterically in the middle of all the screaming. It made me wonder if I was going crazy. That's how they always depict crazy people on television, laughing in dire situations, when they should be reacting more appropriately. But all I could do was laugh, because my life is complete and utter shit. It's shit. It is shit. My husband is dead. My sister is dead. Their illegitimate child has been handed over to me to raise when my own daughter barely speaks to me anymore. I'm not qualified for this. And I can't even escape this shit life to watch television because the damn TV is still broken. I should call them. Call who? I spin around shocked to find Clara home. I didn't even hear her walk through the door. Call who? She repeats. I didn't realize I said that out loud. The cable company? I miss television. Clara shakes her head as if she wants to say, cable is so outdated, Mom. But she doesn't. She walks over and takes Elijah from me. There are 2 cable companies in this town, but I get lucky and call the one we actually have an account with first. I'm on hold forever before I finally get an appointment confirmed. When I hang up, Clara is looking up at me from her position on the couch. Have you even slept yet? I'm assuming she asks this because I'm in yesterday's clothes, and I haven't brushed my hair. I can't even remember if I brushed my teeth. I usually do it before I go to sleep and as soon as I wake up, but I haven't done either of those things because Clara is right. I haven't slept. I wonder how long someone can go on no sleep. Apparently, for Elijah, it's 7 hours, because that's how many have passed between his last nap and this one. Call Jonah and tell him to come get his son. You look like you're about to break. I avoid responding to her comment, lifting Elijah out of her arms. Can you run to the store and grab some diapers? I only have one left and he needs changing. Jonah can't bring you more? Clara asks. Isn't that his responsibility? I look away from Clara, since she's staring at me like I'm water and she can see right through me. Cut Jonah some slack, I say to her. His world has been turned upside down. Our worlds were turned upside down, too. Doesn't mean we'd abandon an infant. You wouldn't understand. He needs time. My wallet is in the kitchen, I say, continuing to avoid throwing Jonah under the bus, no matter how much I want to. Clara takes my money and leaves for the store. When it's just me and Elijah, I lay him on the pallet I made for him. He's finally asleep, and I have no idea how long it'll last, so I take advantage of it and use the time to go to the kitchen and rinse out his bottles. He hasn't had breast milk since Jenny died, but he seems to be taking to formula pretty well. It just makes for a hell of a lot of dishes. I'm scrubbing one of the bottles when it happens. I start crying. Lately, when I start crying, I can't turn it off. I cry with Elijah at night. I cry with him during the day. I cry in the shower. I cry in my car. I have a perpetual headache and a perpetual heartache. And sometimes I just wish it would end. All of it. The whole world. You know your life is shit when you're hand-washing baby bottles, praying for Armageddon.
Chapter 12. Clara. There are several routes I can take to get from my house to the grocery store, or my house to the school, or my house to basically anywhere in town. One of them is the main road through the center of downtown, which is the shortest way. The other is the loop, which is out of my way, but even still, it's the only road I've taken to get anywhere for almost 2 weeks now. Because it's the only road that takes me right by Miller Adams's house. The city limit sign has moved a little more, and I can see now why he's moving it in small increments. Unless you're looking to see if it's been moved, it would be hard to notice a 20-foot shift every week. I've noticed, though, and it makes me smile every time I see it in a different spot. I drive this way in hopes he'll be on the side of the road again, and I'll have an excuse to stop. He's never out here, though. I continue my drive to the grocery store to get diapers, even though I have no idea what kind of diapers or what size to get. Texts to my mother when I arrive at the store go unanswered. She must be busy with Elijah. I open my contact for Jonah. I stare at it, wondering why my mother wouldn't call him for diapers. I'm also curious as to why she's had Elijah for as long as she has. I could tell she was lying to me when she said he just needed a break. I could see it in her eyes. She was worried. She's hoping a break is all he needs. But what if Lexi is right? What if Jonah decides not to come back for him? If that's the case, it's one more thing to add to the long list of tragedies I'm responsible for. Jonah is stressed because he lost the mother of his child and has no idea how to raise him alone. And none of this would be happening if it weren't for me. I need to fix whatever is going on, but I can't do that when I don't know what exactly is going on. I decide not to call Jonah. I put my phone in my pocket and leave the store without buying diapers, and then I drive straight to Jonah's house because Aunt Jenny isn't here to give me answers, and my mother certainly isn't being honest with me. No better way to get answers than to go straight to the source. I can hear the television when I approach Jonah's front door. I breathe out a little bit of relief, knowing if the television is on, he probably hasn't skipped town. Yet. I ring the doorbell and hear rustling inside of the house, then footsteps. The footsteps fade as if he's walking away, attempting to avoid his visitor. I start beating on the door, wanting him to know I'm not going away until he opens this door. I'll go through a window if I have to. Jonah! I yell. Nothing. I try the doorknob, but it's locked, so I knock again with my right hand and ring the doorbell with my left. I do this for a full 30 seconds before I hear footsteps again. The door swings open. Jonah is pulling on a t-shirt.
Give a guy a second to get dressed, he says.
I push open the door and move past him, entering his house without permission. I haven't been here since a week before Jenny died. It's incredible how fast a man can let something go to complete shit. Not that it's reached the point of disgusting, but it has definitely reached the point of pathetic. Clothes on the floor, empty pizza boxes on the counter, 2 open chip bags on the couch. As if he's embarrassed by the state of his house, which he should be, he starts to gather trash and carry it toward the kitchen. What are you doing? I ask. He steps on the trash can lever and the lid pops open. I think his plan was to drop the trash into the trash can, but it's too full for that. So he releases the lever and sets the trash on the kitchen counter with a pile of other trash.
Cleaning, he says.
He takes the lid off the trash can and begins to tie the bag shut. You know what I mean. Why has my mother had Elijah since Sunday? Jonah pulls the bag of trash out of the can and sets it next to the kitchen door that leads to the garage. He pauses for a moment and looks at me, as if he might actually be honest with his answer. But then he shakes his head.
You wouldn't understand.
I am so sick of hearing those words. It's as if adults assume that being 16 prevents a person from understanding the English language. I understand enough to know that there's nothing in the world that should keep a parent from their child. Not even grief. Are you even concerned about him? Jonah looks offended by my question.
Of course I am.
You have a funny way of showing it.
I'm not in a good place.
I laugh. Yeah, neither is my mother. She lost her husband and her sister. Jonah's response is flat.
I lost my best friend, my fiancé, and my son's mother.
And now your son lost you. That seems fair. Jonah sighs, leaning against the counter. He looks down at the floor, and I can tell my being here is making him feel guilty. Good. He deserves to feel guilty. And I'm not even done yet. Do you think you're hurting more than my mother?
No,
he says instantly, convincingly. Then why are you putting your responsibilities on her? It's not like you're grieving more than she is, and now you've dropped your kid off with her, like your grief is more important than what she's going through. Jonah takes in what I'm saying. I can see it sinking in because he looks guilt-ridden. He pushes off the counter and turns away from me, like my presence alone is making him feel remorse. Elijah rolled over last night, I say. Jonah spins around, his eyes darting back to mine.
Did he really?
I shake my head. No. But he will soon, and you're gonna miss it. Jonah's jaw hardens. I can see the shift in him seconds before it happens.
What the hell am I doing?
He whispers. He rushes to the dining room table, swiping up a set of car keys. He begins to head for the garage door. Where are you going? Jonah pauses, then faces me.
To get my son.
He opens the garage door. But before he leaves, I call after him. I'll stay and clean your house for $50. Jonah then walks back through the living room as he pulls his wallet out of his pocket. He takes out 2 20s and a 10 and hands the 3 bills to me. Then he does something unexpected. He leans in and gives me a quick kiss on the forehead. When he pulls back, he's staring at me with an intense expression.
Thank you, Clara.
I smile and shake the 3 bills in my hand. But I know he isn't thanking me for staying to clean his house. He's thanking me for knocking some sense back into him.
Chapter 13. Morgan. I'm in the laundry room, rewashing the few outfits I have of Elijah's, when I hear the front door open and close. Clara must be back from the store with diapers. I'm still crying. Big surprise. I wipe at my eyes before turning on the dryer and heading back into the living room. When I round the corner, I pause. Jonah is standing in my living room. He's holding Elijah, cradling him against his chest, kissing him over and over on top of his head. I'm sorry, I hear him whispering. Daddy is so, so sorry. I don't want to interrupt the moment. It's heartwarming, which is odd, since I was so full of anger just minutes before. But I can see in Jonah's expression that he realizes he can't just walk away from Elijah. No matter who fathered him, Jonah has raised him. Jonah is the one Elijah knows and loves. I'm happy that Jonah didn't make my worst fears come true. I walk to my bedroom and give them a moment while I repack Elijah's diaper bag. When I return to the living room, Jonah hasn't moved. He's still cradling him, as if he can't apologize enough to Elijah. As if Elijah even understands what happened. Jonah glances up and we make eye contact. As much relief as I feel right now from knowing his love for Elijah overpowers any DNA they do or don't share, I'm still a little pissed that it took him almost 4 days to come to his senses. If you abandon him again, I'm filing for custody. Without wasting a second, Jonah crosses the room and wraps an arm around me, tucking my head under his chin.
I'm sorry, Morgan. I don't know what I was thinking.
His voice is desperate, as if I might not forgive him.
I'm so sorry.
The thing is, I don't even blame him. If Chris and Jenny weren't already dead, I'd kill them for doing this to Jonah. It's all I've been able to think about for the past few days. Jenny had to know there was a chance Chris would be Jonah's father. And if Jenny knew, Chris knew. I've asked myself why they would allow Jonah to think for one second that he fathered a child that wasn't his. The only reason I can come up with isn't good enough. I believe they kept it a secret because they were afraid of the fallout the truth would bring. Clara would have never forgiven them. I think Jenny and Chris would have done anything in their power to keep the truth from Clara, even if that meant pulling Jonah into the lie. For Clara's sake, I'm relieved they did such a good job of hiding it. But on Jonah's behalf, and Elijah's, I'm livid. Which is why I don't say anything else to Jonah to make him feel guilty. He needed time to adjust to such traumatic news. He doesn't need to feel guilty. He's back, and he's remorseful. And that's all that matters right now. Jonah is still clinging to me, still apologizing, as if I need more of an apology than Elijah. I don't. I understand completely. I'm just relieved to know that Elijah won't have to grow up without a father. That was my biggest concern. I pull away from Jonah and hand him Elijah's diaper bag. There's a load of his onesies in the dryer. You can come get them later this week.
Thank you, he says.
He kisses Elijah on the forehead again and stares at him for a moment before going to leave. I follow them across the living room. When Jonah reaches the front door, he turns around and says it again, somehow with even more conviction.
Thank you.
I shake my head. It's okay, Jonah. Really. When the door closes, I fall onto the couch with relief. I don't think I've ever been this exhausted. From life, from death, from everything. I wake up an hour later in the same position when Clara finally returns home without diapers. I rub sleep from my eyes, wondering where she's been if she wasn't out getting diapers like I asked her to. As if having an infant all week wasn't exhausting enough, having a teenager who decided to start her rebellious period on the day of her father's funeral takes the cake. I follow her into the kitchen. She opens the refrigerator, and I'm behind her, trying to see if she smells like weed again. She doesn't, but nowadays they all eat those gummies. It's easier to hide. Clara looks at me over her shoulder with a raised brow. Did you just sniff me? Where have you been? You were supposed to be out getting diapers. Is Elijah still here? No. Jonah came and got him. She sidesteps around me. Then we don't need diapers. She pulls the diaper money out of her pocket and sets it on the counter. She heads for the kitchen door, but I've been way too lenient on her. She's 16. I have a right to know where she's been. I block her from leaving the kitchen. Were you with that guy? What guy? The guy who got you high at your father's funeral? I thought we were past this. And no. She tries to step around me again, but I stay in front of her, still blocking the door. You can't see him anymore. I'm not. And even if I were, he's not a bad guy. Can I please go to my room now? After you tell me where you've been. She throws her hands up in defeat. I was cleaning Jonah's house. Why do you automatically assume the worst? I feel like she's lying to me. Why would she be cleaning Jonah's house? Check the app if you don't believe me. Call Jonah. She squeezes past me and pushes open the kitchen door. I guess I could have checked the app. I just feel like, even with the app, I don't know what she's up to. Her app said she was at the movie theater the day of Chris's funeral, but it certainly didn't tell me she was doing drugs while she was there. I feel like the app is useless at this point. I should probably just cancel it because it costs money. But Chris is the one who subscribed us to the app, and Chris's phone probably got smashed in the wreck. It wasn't in the box of belongings they gave us from Jenny's car. I wouldn't know the password to his phone, even if I did find it. That should have been my first clue that he was hiding so many things from me. But who needs clues when you don't even realize you're supposed to be playing detective? I never even suspected anything was amiss. Here I go again. I kind of wish Elijah was still here. He kept my mind preoccupied. I didn't have to think about what Jenny and Chris did when every minute was consumed by Elijah. Jonah is lucky in that regard. Elijah will probably keep him so busy and exhausted that his brain will have time for little else. I'll pour myself some wine. Maybe take a bubble bath. That might help. Clara stormed out of here a good 30 seconds ago, but the kitchen door is still swinging back and forth. I hold it with my hand, then stare at the back of my hand, my palm pressed flat against the door. I fixate on my wedding ring. Chris gave me this one for our 10th wedding anniversary. It replaced the gold band he'd bought me when we were teenagers. Jenny helped Chris pick this one out. Was there a fair happening way back then? For the first time since the day I put on this ring, I feel the urge to get it off me. I slip it off my finger and throw it at the door. I don't know where it lands, and I don't care. I push the kitchen door open and go to the garage in search of something that can take care of at least one problem in my life. I really want a machete or an axe, but all I find is a hammer. I take it back to the kitchen with me to take care of this damn door once and for all. I swing the hammer at the door. It makes a nice dent. I swing at it again, wondering why I didn't just try to take the door off the hinges. Maybe I just really needed something to take out my aggression on. I hit the door in the same spot over and over until the wood begins to chip. Eventually, a hole begins to form, and I can see from the kitchen into the living room. It feels good. That kind of worries me. I keep hacking away, though. Every time I swing at the door swings away from me. I swing again when it comes back. My hammer and I fall into a rhythm with the door until there's at least a 12-inch hole. I put all my strength behind the next swing, but the hammer gets stuck in the wood and slips out of my hands. When the door swings back toward me, I stop it with my foot. I can see Clara through the hole in the door. She's standing in the living room, staring at me. She looks bewildered. My hands are on my hips now. I'm breathing heavily from the physical exertion this hole took to make. I wipe sweat from my forehead. "You have officially lost your mind," Clara says. "I'd be better off as a homeless runaway." I push at the door, holding it open with my hand. If she really thinks it's so bad, being here with me, run away then, Clara, I say flatly. She shakes her head as if I'm the disappointing one, then walks back to her bedroom. "That's not the way to the front door," I yell. She slams her bedroom door, and it only takes 3 seconds for me to regret yelling at her. If she's anything like I was at that age, which she is, she's probably packing a bag and is about to climb out her window. I wasn't serious. I'm just frustrated. I need to stop taking it out on her, but her attitude with me is making her an easy target. I go to her bedroom and open her door. She's not packing a bag. She's just lying on her bed, staring up at the ceiling, crying. My heart clenches with guilt. I feel terrible for snapping at her. I sit down on her bed and run an apologetic hand over her head. "I'm sorry. I don't really want you to run away." Clara rolls over dramatically and faces the other direction. She pulls a pillow to her chest. "Get some sleep, Mom. Please."
Chapter 14. Clara. I finished my first ever full cup of coffee about 2 weeks ago, the morning after my mother knocked a random hole in our kitchen door. Since then, I've discovered the one thing that just might save me from my month-long depression. Starbucks. Not that I've never been to a Starbucks before. I've just always been that teenager who orders tea at coffee shops. But now that I know what it's like to be sleep-deprived, I've been through almost every drink on the menu and know exactly which one is my favorite. The classic venti caramel macchiato. No substitutions. I take my drink to an empty corner table, one that I've sat at almost daily for the last 2 weeks. When I'm not at Lexi's house after school, I'm here. Things have gotten so tense at home, I don't even want to be there. My curfew on school nights is 10, as long as I don't have homework. My curfew on weekends is midnight. Suffice it to say, I haven't been home before 10 p.m. since the last argument my mother and I got into. If she's not demanding to know where I am and who I'm with, or sniffing me for signs of drug use, She's moping around the house, knocking random holes in the doors. And then there's everything we haven't talked about. The fact that I was texting Jenny when they died. And I know where she and Jonah went when they left the house together. The Langford. I saw it on the app. I asked her that night where they'd gone, but she wouldn't tell me. If I brought it up to her now, I have a feeling she'd lie to me. Things just feel uneven with her. We aren't on the same page. We don't know how to talk to each other now that Dad and Jenny are gone. Or maybe it's me. I don't know. I just know I can't take being in our house right now. I hate the feeling I get when I'm there. It feels weird without my father there. And I'm scared it'll never go back to the way it used to be. It used to feel like home. Now it feels like an institution, and my mom and I are the only patients. It's sad that I feel more comfortable at Starbucks than in my own home. Lexi works at Taco Bell 5 days a week, and tonight she's back at it. So I get comfortable in my quiet little corner of caffeine land and open a book. I'm only a few pages in when my phone vibrates on the table. I flip it over to look at the new Instagram notification. Miller Adams started following you. I stare at the notification, allowing the meaning of it to soak in for a moment. Did Shelby break up with him again? Is this his way of getting back at her? I feel a smile attempting to form on my lips, but I bite it back because I'm kind of getting whiplash. Get in my truck, get out of my truck. Let's be friends on Instagram. No, let's not be friends. Okay, yeah, let's be friends. I won't allow myself to feel happy about this until I know what the hell he's up to. I open our Instagram messages, since I deleted his number, and I send him one. Me. Get your heart broken again? Miller.
I think I did the breaking this time.
There's no biting back my smile this time. It's too big to fight. Miller.
What are you doing right now?
Me. Nothing. Miller.
Can I come over?
My house is the last place I want him. Me. Meet me at Starbucks. Miller.
On my way.
I set my phone down and pick up my book again, but I know I won't be able to concentrate on the words while I wait for him. It doesn't matter, though, because 5 seconds later, Miller is pulling an empty chair over to my table. He sits, straddling the chair backward. I pull my book to my chest and stare at him. You were already here? He grins.
I was standing in line to get coffee when I messaged you.
Which means he probably saw me grinning like an idiot. That feels like an invasion of privacy.
It's not my fault you're severely unaware of your surroundings.
He's right. When I'm here, I don't have a clue what's going on around me. Sometimes I sit here for 2 hours reading, and when I close the book, I'm surprised to look up and see that I'm not at home. I slide the book into my bag and take a sip of my coffee. Then I lean back in my chair, my gaze rolling over Miller. He looks better. Not so heartbroken this time. He actually looks content. But I have no idea how long that'll last before he realizes how much he misses Shelby and unfollows me on Instagram again. I don't know how I feel about being your backup plan every time things go south with your girlfriend. He smiles gently.
You aren't a backup plan. I like talking to you. I don't have a girlfriend anymore, so I no longer feel guilty talking to you.
That's essentially what a backup plan is. Priority doesn't work out. Move on to second tier. A barista calls Miller's name, but he stares at me for 5 long seconds before he scoots his chair away from the table and goes to retrieve his coffee. When he comes back, he doesn't revisit the conversation. He changes the subject entirely.
Feel like going for a ride?
He takes a sip of his coffee, and I have no idea how something as simple as a cute guy sipping coffee could be appealing. But it is. So I grab my bag and stand up. Sure. Aside from a few dates I went on with a guy named Aaron last year, without my parents' permission, I've never been on a date with anyone else. Not that I consider whatever this is we're doing an actual date, but I can't help but compare it to what little experience I've had in the past. My parents have been extremely overprotective, so I never even bothered asking if I could go out with a guy. The rule has always been that I could date at 16, but I've been 16 for almost a whole year and have avoided it. The idea of bringing a guy into my house to meet my parents always sounded dreadful, so if I wanted to hang out with a guy, I usually just did it behind their backs with Lexi's help. I do know enough to know that silence is your enemy on dates. You try to fill that silence by asking trivial questions that no one really wants to answer, and then, if you can get past the terrible answers, you might get to make out at the end of the night. But whatever this is between me and Miller is not a date. Not even close. We haven't said one word to each other since we got into his truck, even though that was over half an hour ago. He isn't forcing me to answer questions I don't want to be asked, and I'm not forcing every ounce of information out of him about his breakup with Shelby. It's just two people listening to music, enjoying the silence. I love it. It might even beat my cozy corner in Starbucks.
This was Gramps' truck, Miller says, breaking our comfortable silence.
But I'm not annoyed by the break. I've actually been wondering why he drives such an old truck, and if there's a story behind it.
He bought it brand new when he was 25. Drove it his whole life.
How many miles are on it?
There were just over 200,000 before it was gutted and everything was replaced. Now there are...
He lifts his hand to look at the dash behind his steering wheel.
19,212.
Does he still drive it? Miller shakes his head.
No, he's not in any shape to drive.
He seemed like he was in pretty good shape to me. Miller scratches his jaw.
He has cancer. The doctors are giving him 6 months, tops.
That feels like a brutal punch to my gut, and I've only met the man once.
He likes to pretend it isn't happening and that he's fine. But I can tell he's scared.
It makes me wonder more about Miller's family. Like what his mother is like. And why my father seemed to hate his father so much. Are the two of you very close? Miller just nods. I can tell by his refusal to verbally answer that question that he's going to take it hard when it does happen. That makes me sad for him. You should write everything down. He gives me a sidelong glance.
What do you mean?
Write it all down. Everything you want to remember about him. You'll be surprised how soon you start to forget everything. Miller smiles at me appreciatively.
I will, he says. I promise. But I also have a camera in his face most of the time for that very reason.
I smile back and then stare out the window. That's all that's said between us until he pulls back into the Starbucks parking lot 15 minutes later. I stretch my back and then my arms before unbuckling my seatbelt. Thank you. I needed that.
Me too,
Miller says. He's leaning against his driver's side door, his head resting on his hand as he watches me gather my bag and open my door. You have good taste in music.
I know,
he says, a soft smile playing on his lips. See you at school tomorrow?
See ya.
The way he's looking at me makes me think he doesn't want me to go. But he's not saying anything to indicate otherwise, so I exit his truck. I shut the door and turn to my car, but I can hear him scrambling out of his truck while I search for my keys. He's next to me now, leaning against my car. Miller's stare is intense. I feel it everywhere.
We should hang out again. You busy tomorrow night?
I halt the search for my keys and make eye contact with him. Tomorrow night sounds good, but tonight sounds even better. It's still another hour before I have to be home. Let's just hang out right now.
Where do you want to go?
I glance at the doors to Starbucks, already craving more caffeine. Another coffee sounds really good. All the smaller tables were taken, which meant we were left choosing between a table with six chairs or the love seat. Miller went for the love seat, and I wasn't sad about that. We're both relaxed into the couch, our heads pressed into the back of the cushions, facing each other. I've pulled my legs onto the love seat, and Miller has one leg propped up. Our knees are touching. Most of Starbucks has cleared out by now, and my drink is almost empty. But we haven't stopped talking and laughing, not even for a few seconds. This version of us is so different than when we were in his truck earlier, but just as comfortable. It just feels natural with him. The silence, the conversation, the laughter. All of it feels so comfortable, and that's something I didn't even know I'd been missing. But I have missed it. Since the moment of the wreck, everything in my life has felt like it's edged in sharp corners. And I've been tiptoeing around this world in the dark for the past month, trying not to injure myself. We haven't talked about his breakup, despite my curiosity about what happened. I was hoping we would avoid talking about the wreck and all that has transpired since then, but he just asked me how my mother is doing. Okay, I guess. I down the last sip of my coffee. I walked in on her trying to tear down the kitchen door with a hammer for no reason at all. Now there's a huge random hole in the center of our door that's been there for 2 weeks. Miller smiles, but it's an empathetic smile.
What about you?
He asks.
Any destruction on your part?
I shrug. Nah, I'm okay. I mean, it's only been a little over a month. I still cry every night, but I don't feel like I can't get out of bed anymore. I shake my empty coffee cup. Acquiring a taste for coffee helped.
Want another one?
I shake my head and set my cup on the table next to me. Then I reposition myself on the couch to get more comfortable. Miller does the same, so we're even closer now. Will you do me a favor? I ask him.
Depends on what it is.
When you become a famous director someday, will you make sure the coffee cups actually have liquid in them when actors hold them in scenes? Miller laughs at this. Loudly.
That is my biggest pet peeve, he says. They're always empty, and when they set them down, you can hear the hollowness of the cup when it hits the table.
I was watching this one movie where an actor was angry, holding a cup of coffee, and he was slinging it around, but not a single drop spilled. It pulled me out of the moment and ruined the entire movie for me. Miller smiles and squeezes my knee.
It's a promise. Every coffee cup on my set will be full.
His hand remains on my knee. It's too obvious to pretend I don't notice, but I try. I keep glancing down, though. I like seeing his hand there. I like feeling his thumb brush back and forth. I like how I feel when I'm with him. And I'm not positive, but I think he likes how I make him feel. Neither of us has stopped smiling. I know I've blushed at least 3 times during our conversation. We both know we're interested, so we aren't even trying to play coy. It's just a matter of me not knowing where his head is, what he's thinking, if he's thought about Shelby at all.
So,
he says,
you decided on a college yet? Still planning on majoring in acting?
This question elicits a big sigh from me. I really want to, but my mother is so against it. So was my father.
Why?
The odds aren't in my favor, so they want me to do something more practical.
I've seen you act. It's what you were born to do.
I sit up a little straighter. Really? What have you seen me in? I always do theater every year at school, but I've never really noticed Miller there before.
I can't remember what it was. I only remember you on stage.
I can feel myself blushing again. I lean back against the couch and smile shyly. What about you? Did you at least apply to UT yet, or anywhere? He shakes his head.
No. We can't afford a school like that, and honestly, I need to stay around here. For Gramps.
I want to ask him more about that, but he seems sad when he talks about it. I don't know if it's because there isn't anyone else to care for his grandfather if he were to move away, or if it's because he'd never leave him regardless. Probably a combination of both. I don't like that this conversation is sending his mind in that direction, so I try to redirect his thoughts. I have a confession. He looks at me expectantly, waiting for me to spill it. I filled out the form for the film submission. Miller smiles.
Good. I was worried you wouldn't do it.
I might have filled it out for you, too. He stares at me, his eyes narrowed.
In case I broke up with Shelby?
I nod. He laughs a little and then says,
thank you.
There's a pause.
So does this mean we're partners?
I shrug. If you want to be. But I mean, if you end up getting back together with Shelby, I'll understand if you can't do... Miller leans forward, dipping his head as he stares at me.
I'm not getting back together with her. Get that out of your head.
Such a short sentence, but such a big statement. One that sends a surge of heat up my chest. He has such a serious look in his eye that it makes me nervous when he begins to speak again.
Earlier, when you called yourself my backup plan, I wanted to laugh. Because if anything, Shelby was my backup plan to you.
A reserved smile spreads across his face.
I've had a thing for you for almost 3 years.
His words stun me into momentary silence. Then I shake my head, confused. 3 years? Why do you never do anything about it?
Timing,
he says quickly.
I almost did once, but then you started dating that one guy.
Aaron.
Yeah, Aaron. Then I started dating Shelby. Then you and Aaron broke up 2 months later.
And then you began to go out of your way to avoid me. Miller looks apologetic when I say that.
You noticed?
I nod. You paid a guy $20 to switch lockers with him on the first day of school this year. I took that very personally. I say it with a laugh, but I'm being completely transparent.
I was trying to keep my distance. Shelby and I were friends before we started dating, so she knew I used to have a thing for you.
That explains so much. That's why you said she's only jealous of me and not other girls?
Yeah.
Miller leans casually against the couch again, his head resting against the back of it. He's watching me process everything he just said. He's staring back at me with so much vulnerability, like it just took a hell of a lot of courage for him to admit what he did, and he's nervous about how I might respond. I don't even know how to react. I kind of want to change the subject because I feel awkward now. I don't have anything to say that'll impress him or make him feel as good as his words just made me feel. For those reasons, the most random thing comes out of my mouth. Does your truck have a name? Miller squints, as if he's wondering what the hell I'm talking about. Then he just laughs, and it's the greatest, deepest laugh.
Yeah. Nora.
Why Nora? He hesitates. I love the smile that's playing on his lips.
It's a Beatles song.
I recall the Beatles poster hanging in his bedroom. So you're a Beatles fan? He nods.
I have a lot of favorite bands. I love music. It feeds my soul.
What are your favorite lyrics? He doesn't even hesitate.
Well, they're not from the Beatles.
Who are they from?
A band called Sounds of Cedar.
Never heard of them, but I like the name.
If I tell you my favorite lyrics by them, you'll want to listen to every song they've ever written.
I smile, hopefully. Good, give me a couple of lines. He leans in just a little and smiles as he repeats the lyrics.
I've believed in you since the moment I met you. I believe in myself now that I've finally left you.
I let the lyrics simmer as we stare at each other. It makes me wonder if those are his favorite lyrics because of his recent breakup with Shelby, or if they were his favorite lyrics even before that. I'm not about to ask him, though. Instead, I release a sigh. Wow, I whisper. Those words are somehow both tragic and inspiring. He smiles gently.
I know.
I can't hide how he makes me feel in this moment. I'm appreciative that being with him gives me a respite from my grief. I'm appreciative that he's not pretending to be someone he's not. I'm appreciative that he broke up with his girlfriend before making a move on me. And even though I don't know him really well, I know him enough to be able to tell that there's a lot of good in him. I'm severely drawn to that part of him. The part of him that showed up to my father's funeral simply because he wanted to check on me. I'm drawn to that part even more than his looks, or his humor, or his terrible singing voice. There are so many feelings swirling around in my chest right now, and I'm afraid the room will start spinning if I don't find my center of gravity. I lean forward and press my lips against his, if only just to balance myself. It's a quick kiss. Unexpected for both of us, I think. When I pull away, I'm biting my lip nervously, wondering if I should have done that. I rest my head against the couch and wait for his reaction. He doesn't take his eyes off me.
I didn't think our first kiss would be like that,
he says quietly. Like what?
Sweet.
How did you think it would be? His eyes wander to the few remaining customers still lingering.
I can't show you in here.
When his gaze meets mine again, the satisfaction in his lazy smile fills me with confidence. Then let's go to your truck. The anticipation for our second kiss makes me even more nervous than our first. We're holding hands when we exit Starbucks. He heads to his truck and opens the passenger door for me. I get in and he shuts it, then walks around to the driver's side. I don't know why I'm so nervous now. Probably because this is actually happening. Me and Miller. Miller and me. What would our ship name be? Cliller? Millera? Ugh, they both sound terrible. Miller closes his door.
What's that look for?
What look? He points at my face.
That one.
I laugh, shaking my head. Nothing, I'm getting ahead of myself. He reaches for my hand and pulls me closer to him. We meet in the middle of his seat. That's the thing about older trucks. The seats are long, without a console to separate the passengers. We're even closer now than we were on the couch. Our faces are closer. Our bodies are closer. Everything is so much closer. His hand is on my outer thigh, and I'm wondering what flavor of sucker he's going to taste like.
What do you mean you're getting ahead of yourself? Do you regret kissing me?
I laugh because that's the last thing I regret. No, I was thinking how terrible our ship names would be. I see relief take over his expression, but then his eyes crinkle at the corners.
Oh, yeah, they're terrible.
What's your middle name?
Jeremiah. What's yours?
The quintessential Nicole.
That's a really long middle name.
I laugh. Smartass. I can see the wheels turning behind his eyes.
Jericho?
That's so bad. I'm thinking about it when it hits me how odd this is. We've had one small peck. We've only spent part of an evening together without him being attached to someone else, yet here we are discussing ship names. I want to believe how he makes me feel, but the truth of the matter is he hasn't even been single long enough to decide if he even wants this to go anywhere.
You're making that face again,
he says. I sigh, breaking eye contact with him. I look down and grab his hand. Sorry, I pause for a moment, then look back up at him. Are you sure about this? I mean, you just broke up with Shelby today or yesterday. I don't even know when, but either way, I don't want to start something if you're going to back out of it in a week. The silence after I finish speaking lingers in the truck for a lot longer than I feel comfortable with. We're still holding hands, and Miller is lightly stroking the outside of my thigh with his other hand. He sighs, more heavily than I want him to. That kind of sigh is usually followed up with words that aren't good.
You know the day in my truck, when you told me to figure out my shit?
I nod.
That was the day I broke up with Shelby. It wasn't today, or yesterday. It was weeks ago. And to be honest, my shit was already figured out long before that day. I just didn't want to hurt her.
Nothing else is said with words. It's all said with a look. His eyes pierce mine with such a concentrated honesty that I suck in a breath. He moves his hand from my leg to my elbow, and then slowly drags his fingers up my arm and neck, coming to a stop at my cheek. I'm pulling in shallow breaths, watching his eyes as they scroll over my face and pause on my lips. Nicomiah sounds okay, I whisper. The moment is interrupted by his laughter. Then his hand slides to the back of my head, and he pulls me to his mouth, still grinning. It's a sweet kiss, at first, much like the one I gave him inside. But then his tongue slips past my lips and touches mine, and the sweetness is gone. This just got serious. I respond with an almost embarrassing hunger, pulling him closer, wanting him and his kiss to take away the last few droplets of grief that are still swimming around inside of me. My hands are in Miller's hair now, and one of his hands is sliding down my back. I've never felt anything so good and perfect before. I can actually feel the dread building inside of me, knowing this kiss will eventually come to an end. He grips my waist and guides me closer so that I'm straddling him. Our new position makes him groan, and his groan makes me kiss him even deeper. I can't get enough. He tastes like coffee rather than suckers, but I don't mind because I actually love the taste of coffee now. His fingers graze the skin of my lower back, and I'm amazed at how such a small touch can cause such a consequential reaction. I tear my mouth from his, afraid of that feeling. That intensity. It's new to me, and I feel somewhat jarred by it. Miller pulls me to him, burying his face against my neck. My arms are wrapped around him, and my cheek is pressed against the top of his head. I can feel his breaths falling in heavy, heated waves against my neck. He sighs, circling his arms more tightly around me.
That's more along the lines of the kind of first kiss I was expecting.
I laugh. Oh, yeah? You like that one better than the sweet one I gave you? He shakes his head and puts a little separation between us so that he can look at me.
No, I loved the sweet kiss, too.
I smile and press my lips gently against his so that I can give him another sweet kiss. He sighs against my mouth and kisses me back. No tongue, just soft lips and a gentle release of air. He peeks over my shoulder, glancing at his radio, and then leans back against the seat.
You're late for curfew.
He says it, sort of with dread, like he wishes we could stay in his truck all night.
How late? It's 15 after.
Well, crap. Miller slides me off of him and then exits the truck. I open my door to get out, and then Miller laces his fingers through mine as he walks me to my car. He opens the door for me, resting an arm on the top of my doorframe. We kiss one more time before I take a seat in my car. I cannot believe how much I'm feeling right now. Before I showed up here today, I lived without Miller in my life perfectly fine. Now I feel like every minute I spend without him is going to be torture.
Night, Clara.
Good night. He stares at me for a moment without shutting my door. Then he just groans.
Tomorrow seems so far away now.
I love the way he put exactly how I'm feeling into the perfect string of words. He closes my door and backs away a few steps. But he doesn't stop watching me, and he doesn't return to his truck until I'm out of the parking lot and on my way home. Late. This should be fun.
Chapter 15. Morgan. I've been sitting on the back patio, contemplating. I'm not sure what I'm contemplating. My mind is like a ping-pong ball, bouncing from thoughts about Chris, to thoughts about how I need to start applying for jobs, to thoughts about going back to college, to thoughts about Clara, and how she's way past curfew. It's almost 10:30 now, so I text her. Again. You're late. Please come home. She's been staying out a lot, and I have no idea who she's with because she barely talks to me anymore. When she is here, she's in her bedroom. The app shows she's always either at Lexi's or Starbucks, but who in the world spends that much time at a coffee shop? There's a soft knock on my back patio door, and I glance up, almost having forgotten that Jonah has been here for the past 20 minutes, fixing the kitchen door. I stand up and tuck my hair behind my ears when he walks outside.
Do you have pliers?
I'm pretty sure Chris does, but his toolbox has a lock on it. But I might have a pair. I walk into the house and go to the laundry room. I keep my own toolbox for when I needed to fix stuff when Chris wasn't around. It's black and pink. Chris got it for me for Christmas one year. He also got one for Jenny. The thought pierces me. Sometimes I think it's getting better, but then the simplest memories remind me how much it still sucks. I pull my toolbox down and hand it to Jonah. Jonah opens it and sorts through it. He doesn't find what he needs.
They're old hinges, he says. I can't get the last one off because it's stripped so bad. I have something that'll work at the house, but it's late, so I'll just come back tomorrow, if that's fine.
He says it like it's a question, so I nod. Yeah, sure. I texted him yesterday, telling him I couldn't get the kitchen door off the hinges and asking if he could help. He said he'd be over tonight, but that it would be late because he was picking his sister up at the airport. He didn't even ask why I needed the door off the hinges. When he got here earlier, he never even asked why there was a huge hole in it. He just walked straight to the door and got to work. I'm waiting for him to ask what happened as we walk toward the front door, but he doesn't. I don't like the quiet, so I throw a question in the mix that I don't even really care to know the answer to. How long is your sister in town for?
Until Sunday. She'd love to see you, she just... You know, she didn't know if you'd want company.
I don't, but for some reason I smile and say, I'd love to see her. Jonah laughs.
No, you wouldn't.
I shrug because he's right. I barely know her. I met her once when we were teens, and I saw her for a few minutes the day after Elijah was born, and she was at both funerals. But that's the extent of my relationship with her. You're right. It was the polite thing to say.
You don't have to be polite, Jonah says. Neither do I. It's the only positive thing to come out of this. We get at least a 6-month pass to be assholes.
I smile, and he nudges his head toward his car.
Walk me out.
I follow him to his car, but before he gets in, he rests his back against the driver's side door and folds his arms over his chest.
I know you probably don't want to talk about it any more than I do, but it affects our kids, so...
I slide my hands into the back pockets of my jeans. I sigh and look up at the night sky. I know. We have to discuss it, because if it's true...
It makes Clara and Elijah half-siblings, Jonah says.
It's weird hearing it out loud. I blow out a slow breath, nervous about what it means. Are you planning on telling him someday? Jonah nods slowly.
Someday. If he asks, if it comes up in conversation.
He sighs.
I honestly don't know. What do you think? Do you want Clara to know?
I'm hugging myself now. It's not cold out, but I have chills for some reason. No, I never want Clara to find out. It would devastate her. Jonah doesn't look angry that I'm essentially asking him not to tell Elijah the truth. He only looks sympathetic to our situation.
I hate that they left this mess for us to clean up.
I agree with him on that. It's a disaster of a mess, one I still haven't even wrapped my head around fully. It's too much to think about so soon, and too much for me to want to discuss it right now. I change the subject, because either way, decisions aren't being made tonight. Clara's birthday is in 2 weeks. I'm thinking about keeping the tradition going with a cookout, but I'm not sure she would want me to. It won't be the same without them here.
You should ask her, Jonah suggests.
I laugh half-heartedly. We aren't on the best terms right now. I feel like I'm walking on eggshells around her. She'd disagree with anything I suggested.
She's almost 17. It would be more out of the ordinary if things were perfect between the two of you.
I appreciate him saying that, but I also know it's not entirely true. I know a lot of mothers who get along just fine with their teenagers. I'm just not one of the lucky ones. Or maybe it isn't about luck. Maybe I went wrong somewhere along the way.
I can't believe she's about to be 17. He says, I remember the day you found out you were pregnant with her.
I remember it, too. It was the day before he left. I divert my gaze to the concrete beneath my feet. Looking at him brings back too many emotions, and I'm really sick of emotions at this point. I clear my throat and take a step back, just as headlights brighten the yard around us. I look up and watch as Clara finally pulls into the driveway. Jonah takes that as his cue to leave, so he opens his car door.
Good night, Morgan.
He waves at Clara before getting into his car. I give him a silent wave and watch him drive away. He's already at the end of our street before Clara gets out of her car. I fold my arms over my chest again and stare at her expectantly. She shuts her door and acknowledges me with a nod, but walks toward the front door. I follow her inside the house, where she kicks her shoes off by the couch. What was that? She asks.
What was what?
She tosses a hand toward the front yard. You and Jonah, in the dark. It was weird. I narrow my eyes at her, wondering if she's just trying to deflect right now. Why are you late for curfew? She looks down at her phone. I am? Yes, I texted you. Twice. She swipes her finger across the screen. Oh, I didn't hear them come through. She slips her phone in her back pocket. Sorry. I was studying at Starbucks, lost track of time. I didn't realize it was so late. She points over her shoulder as she backs toward the hallway. I need to shower. I don't even bother pushing for a more honest answer. She wouldn't give me one anyway.
I walk to the kitchen and grab a Jolly Rancher. I lean against the counter and stare absentmindedly at the hole in my kitchen door, wondering why Jonah so casually brought up the day I found out I was pregnant, like it wasn't one of the worst days of my life. Maybe he brought it up because his leaving the next day didn't mean as much to him as it did to the rest of us. I've forced myself not to think about that week since it happened, but now that Jonah brought it up, every moment of that day begins running through my mind. We were at the lake. The three of them had been swimming, and I was sitting on a blanket in the grass, reading a book. They all came out of the water at the same time, but Jonah was the only one who walked in my direction. Chris and Jenny ran up the embankment toward the playground. "Morgan," Jenny yelled, "come swing with us." She was running backward up the hill, trying to entice me over. I shook my head and waved her on. I wasn't in the mindset to be playful that day. I hadn't even wanted to go to the lake in the first place, but Chris insisted on it. I wanted a night alone with him, without Jonah and Jenny tagging along. I needed to talk to him in private, but we hadn't had a single second of privacy that day. Sometimes he was oblivious to my moods, even though I had certainly been in a mood since realizing I was late for my period last night.
"What's eating you today?" Jonah said as he dropped onto the grass next to me. "You've been acting strange."
I almost laughed at his timing. "Did Chris send you over to fish it out of me?" Jonah stared at me like I had somehow insulted him.
"Chris lives in blissful oblivion."
Jonah's response surprised me. I noticed he had been making jabs at Chris, little ones, harmless ones, but I noticed. "I thought you guys were supposed to be best friends."
"We are," Jonah said. "I'd do anything for him."
"Sometimes you act like you don't even like him." Jonah didn't deny it. Instead, he gave his attention to the lake in front of us, like my comment forced him into contemplation. I picked up a pebble and threw it toward the lake. It didn't even hit the water.
"We're out of drinks," Chris
said, jogging up to us. He dropped onto the grass dramatically and pulled me to him. He kissed me.
"I'm gonna run to the store. Wanna come?"
I was relieved to finally get some alone time with him. We had a lot to talk about.
"Sure."
"I have to pee," Jenny said. "I'm coming too." I had to stop myself from rolling my eyes, but every time I thought I might get 1 minute alone to talk to Chris about what was going on with me, something or someone inserted themselves into our scene. "Take Jenny," I said with a sigh. "I'll wait here."
"You sure?"
Chris asked as he hopped to his feet. I nodded. "Better hurry. She's already racing you up the hill." Chris looked behind him and then took off in a sprint.
"Cheater."
I turned back around and looked at Jonah, who was sharing the blanket with me, his knees pulled up, his arms resting on them. He was staring out at the lake. I could sense something was brewing in him. "What's eating you today?" I said, repeating his own question. His eyes cut to mine.
"Nothing."
"It's something," I said. The look he gave me in that moment was heart-stopping. It was the same feeling I was starting to get every time he looked at me, like it had somehow reached past my eyes and slid down my spine. The reflection of the lake in front of us made his eyes look liquefied. The realization started to grow on me that I was staring back at him much the same way, so I ripped my gaze from his. Jonah sighed heavily and then whispered,
"I'm worried we got it wrong."
His statement made my breath hitch. I didn't ask him what we might have gotten wrong, because I was too scared of his answer. I was scared he was going to say we weren't with the person we were meant to be with. Of course, he could have been about to say anything, but that's where my mind went, because why else did he look at me the way he looked at me sometimes? I tried to ignore it because Jonah and I had never been romantic in any sense, but we had a connection, one Chris and I didn't even have. I hated it. I hated that Jonah always knew when something was bothering me, but Chris was clueless. I hated that Jonah and I could give each other a look and know exactly what the other was thinking. I hated how he always saved the watermelon Jolly Ranchers for me because it was a sweet gesture. And I didn't like that my boyfriend's best friend did sweet things for me. Besides, he and Jenny had just started dating. Unlike Jenny, I never would have betrayed my own sister. Which is why that day on the shore of the lake when Jonah whispered,
"I'm worried we got it wrong,"
I said the one thing I knew would put us both in our place.
I'm pregnant. Jonah stared at me in stunned silence. I saw the color drain from his face. My confession shook him. He stood up and walked a few feet away from me. It was as if all the what-ifs sank into him at once. He looked like he'd shrunk 2 inches by the time he walked back over to me.
Does Chris know?
I shook my head, watching how his eyes had gone from liquefied to frozen in a matter of seconds. No, I haven't told him yet. Jonah chewed on his bottom lip for a moment, nodding in thought. He looked angry, or destroyed.